opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning. It's a great day to be living here in the heart of Superior, California. This is Ken Murray, not Carl and Linda Bott. They're off having a good time. So we'll be visiting for the next couple of hours. In the first hour, my guest this morning is Mr. Steve Bade. Steve is the deputy city manager for the city of Reading, recently promoted deputy city manager of the city of Reading. Steve, why don't you start off by telling us your background? Where'd you come from? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? That kind of stuff.
Good morning, Ken. Thank you. And, you know, I grew up in the North State, so I grew up here, and I was born in Reading, and I've been here since 1970. So I only briefly went away to school and down in Sacramento, and I was able to come back up here and finish my education, and then started working with the city of Reading back in 1998. So I've been there for more than 23 years. But have a wife and three boys, and just love living in the North State and contributing to our community through my, through my job, but then also in life itself.
As deputy city manager, what's that? Second in command?
No, that would be third in command. We do have an assistant city manager also. So, but you know, I work alongside with the other management, you know, director team, and I oversee the housing division, which includes the housing authority, and then our community development section. Then I also oversee economic development and innovations.
Are we economically developing?
Yes, I would say so. You know, I think we have certain areas in our community. Actually, our whole community, I think, is very robust right now with a number of projects and redevelopment kind of opportunities that are occurring. I would say that our community is rebuilding well.
All right, let's talk about just for a moment homelessness in our community, since you're in charge of housing. What's your plan?
Well, you know, what we try to do is the city receives a variety of grant funds from the federal and state level. And, you know, the city is on the, you know, we use those dollars to invest in, you know, the bricks and mortar type of elements that assist the homeless. And so we provide opportunities with developers or nonprofits to create facilities that are going to offer services to the homeless. And we have a variety of those in our community. Some of those are, you know, emergency type of housing. Some of them are transitional, and some of those are permanent. So there's a layer or a process that really needs to be set up in order for the homeless to really get back on their feet. And so we try to create opportunities like that. You know, we'll have, you know, currently we have FaithWorks is constructing four more units over in MLK. And, you know, that's a nice transitional facility that gives people to get off the street, get into a program, get some services, and really get back into the fold of the community. So we're trying to develop partnerships. And a lot of times we'll take and use our brick and mortar opportunities with our grant funds and partner with the county to provide those services.
All right. There are different pots of money you use, as you just described. Excuse me. I know one of them is HUD vouchers. Mm-hmm. HUD vouchers are from the federal government administered by the city, if I understand that correctly.
That is correct, yes.
So the city doesn't make any money off HUD vouchers, but they administer them. And the last time I heard, the list was long in order to get a voucher so someone can, in fact, go out and get an apartment.
Yeah, that is correct. And there is a high demand for that program. And a lot of times, I would say that right now there's probably 1,000, 1,200 local people on that list. But our total comprehensive list is probably around, I'd say, 6,000 or 7,000. It counts a lot of people that are across the nation. They will put their name on a list and just hope they get, you know, pulled in. But we have priorities in our community where our local people get that priority. And so really, the real driving list is around, I'd say, 1,000, 1,200. But we do go through that list rather quickly. So it may take, you know, a couple of years to get through that list. But, you know, it's a good service in the community that we provide by assisting families and, you know, elderly and disabled with those vouchers. But, yeah, we just administer those vouchers and try to get them back out on the street as fast as we can. So we have – right now we are – I would say we're probably about 98% utilized. So most of our vouchers are out there and serving the community.
A lot of landlords don't want to rent to HUD tenants. What's the number one reason that you hear?
I think that the number one reason is they don't, there's a false understanding of who those clients are. And so, you know, of course, there's always going to be a small percentage that can be problematic. And we sometimes tend to let those few fully, you know, I guess, represent the program. That's really not the case. These are really people that are mostly, you know, are working in the community or they have a limited income there. They are on Social Security or disability. And so, yeah, I think it's just a bad perception sometimes of that program. But we, you know, we advertise it out in the community. We try to work with all the landlords, and it's really a program that, you know, if you are on that, you know, you're getting a guaranteed portion of that rent coming from the federal government. So it's really, I think, more of a benefit. It just has sometimes a bad label.
The bad label, I've never. I mean, I understand there's bad apples, but there's bad apples who have jobs and can pay their own rent, not taking HUD. And I've had rentals over the years. I've managed rentals. I've owned them. I found that HUD tenants were fine, provided, as a landlord, I screened them just like I would anybody else. Talk to their last landlord. Did they leave, you know, piles of garbage everywhere? That kind of thing. In addition, HUD pays for repairs to the home if they destroy it up to a certain level. And I think it's like three times the monthly rent or something. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, part of the HUD rental program and in the HUD contracts, you know, there is a provision for the repair of a home if your HUD tenant, you know, pokes holes in the walls and stuff. And maybe not enough people take advantage of that, but it is in there. And because of that, I never had any particular hesitancy renting to HUD tenants. The money's good because it comes straight from the government. And if you screen the tenants, you don't have that problem. Mm-hmm. You know, just like I don't understand why anybody would ever put anybody in without screening them first. And screening means you can call the last landlord, but that's probably not the best one. Call the one before that, because he's far enough removed that he'll now tell you the truth. The one they're currently living with probably is going to lie to you to get rid of them.
Yeah, that's
they're bad.
Yeah,
I mean, it's exactly. Just the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is Free Fire Radio. The phone number here is 605-4567. It's 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. It's your talk radio. If you have a question for Mr. Bade, give us a call. We'll be right back.
Tired of listening to people who are angry all the time?
Try listening to Armstrong and Getty from 9 to noon right after Free Fire Radio.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Aloha. This is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
As Shasta County gradually reopens for business, we can all do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a mask when in public. Cloth face coverings help reduce the spread of germs by preventing the release of droplets when someone speaks, coughs, or sneezes. Wash your face covering often, ideally after each use or at least daily. Wash with detergent and hot water and dry on a hot cycle. Here is Shasta County Health Officer Dr. Karen Ramstrom.
Remember, wearing a face covering is not a replacement for physical distancing, frequent hand washing, and staying home when sick. Your mask protects me and my mask protects you. Together, we can stop the spread.
For more information, including how to make your own cloth face covering, go to ShastaReady.org.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com, featuring Armstrong and Getty, both smart and funny. Plus, you will hear Dave Ramsey, Mark Levin, and Ben Shapiro. And don't miss our local programming right here on KCNR.
Hear us streaming 24/7 at KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Ken Murray sitting in for Carl and Linda Bott. My guest this morning is Steve Bade, Deputy City Manager for the City of Reading. We were talking about the city is in the bricks and mortar business. And I am really, really curious about something. This downtown improvement project apparently is a partnership between K2 and the City of Reading. What did they put up and what did you put up in this partnership?
Well, it is a shared partnership. And, you know, first it started with the application at the state level to obtain affordable housing, sustainable communities dollars. So there's a applicant and co-applicant partnership that we start with.
So they filled out an application form. And you signed it?
Yeah.
You, the city, signed it?
Yes. You know, we were approved by City Council to pursue those dollars. And, you know, it's an extensive application. You're trying to hit some threshold items with the state in order to get your development to qualify. And location of that project is one of the big factors in that application, and it just happens to be that the project is right in our urban core, and they're, you know, at the state level, they're trying to promote projects that are, you know, creating affordable housing, but then also their sustainable developments.
The state always have money for that?
No, this is actually a new program. It actually came on the tails of redevelopment being eliminated. This is one of the programs that the state made available to communities to help revitalize their downtown urban cores.
So is it a grant or a loan?
Well, it's both. There are portions of that funding that is a grant from the state and then a portion that is actually a loan. Both the affordable housing portions are a loan in that project.
I still don't understand. So who's on the hook on the default?
K2 is on the hook for the default of the loan, and then the city and K2 are for the grant. So if you don't perform on the grant, then yeah, you could definitely be you would be on the hook along with that developer. So luckily we're the city of Reading's a good performer. K2 has been a great performer, and things have gone very well. So, but when it comes down to, you know, a portion of that grant, you know, I would say it's about, you know, on the first one, I think we were about $6 million or $7 million, somewhere in that range, for that is a loan, and it's a loan. Actually, it's $5.8 million. It's a loan coming from the state, and that will be on the property until they pay that off.
And who signed the loan?
K2 did.
Not the city of Reading.
Well, we're on that loan in a performance measure. But K2 is the one that's the responsible entity at the end of the day. It's actually Downtown Reading Investors is their limited partnership that is on that loan.
So
we service the loan, and we make sure that the units are affordable for a certain period of time, and then they end up paying that loan back in accordance with the terms of that loan.
All right. How many dollars in grant dollars have gone into this project, and how much is loan?
There is about $5.8 million in an affordable housing loan, and then the other portion is a grant, and that's a little over twelve million.
And what's the grant for?
The grant. The larger portion of the grant is really for redoing the streets, opening up the streets in downtown, and redoing the infrastructure to help facilitate the development of the project.
And that money flows into the city?
Yes, we're like a conduit on that, yes. It comes through the city, and we pay it into the projects. And so there's two different contracts. There's a contract for the development of Market Center, the multifamily building, and there's a contract that the city put out to redevelop the streets.
Who's the contractor on the streets?
The contractor is SNL.
And years ago, 20 years ago or more, when the Cascade Theater was done, there was a demonstration project made out of that one block.
Mm-hmm.
Is the new opening downtown going to be a replica of that block? Or did somebody redesign what we really want?
Well, it was redesigned, and it was, you know, there's different elements in the streets that were developed between Placer and Tehama, California, and Pine. So they don't match the Market Street demonstration block or the Yuba Street demonstration block in the front of the post office. It's a different look. You know, this time we have pavers in the street as opposed to, you know, all asphalt. So there, you know, there's different elements. We have pavers and we have concrete. And so, yeah, it all ties back to some of your infrastructure design and how you're trying to improve, you know, whether it's drainage, you're trying to, you know, you're developing streets to today's standards as opposed to 20 years ago. So things are a little different, and we had an opportunity to actually bring a little better kind of design into the streets downtown. And so we were bringing pavers this time, which I think, you know, we have some stamped looking pavers and, you know, I guess, you know, looks throughout the city, but this is actual pavers. And so it went very well, I would say. I think the design complements Market Street and Butte Street, but it's not the same.
Building a street with pavers is more expensive than building it with asphalt.
Yes, it can. Yes, it is.
And okay. So the city is on the hook for the grant, for performing under the grant.
Correct.
But you're not on the hook for the loan.
No, that's actually with the developer itself. So the developer is responsible for those affordable housing units. We're just making sure that those dollars were used to develop those affordable housing units.
So why can't I come to you with a grant application and get you to co-sign it and send it to the state?
You can. So we're open to developers that would like to partner with the city and create these applications with the federal or state government. So we do that, and we have a number of partnerships in the community that we've done this. Yes.
Like what?
You know, other partnerships would have been with, you know, say it was like NVCSS or Community Revitalization Development Corporation, with Dave Rutledge's group. We do those projects because typically they're attracting, you know, other tax credits to come into the community and create affordable housing units. So we will, you know, we get letters of interest from developers up and down California to create housing in our community, whether, you know, we've done some similar Woodlands 1 and Woodlands 2, or even Link did one on E Street. We have a variety of them in our community.
Do I have to have any money?
Yes, you do. So typically, you know,
I've got you. You're going to be my partner. Here's money.
Yeah, we're only a portion of that funding source. You know, we're just really a gap financer. I would say that, you know, the city is probably, I don't know, we're a gap financer. We're a pretty small amount of the financing that goes into these projects. You know, take, for example, if you're looking at Market Center, that's a $42 million project, and, you know, we received $5.8 million from the state in as a grant. And then we use some of our local funds in the amount of, I think that was $4.8 million, that we use from our federal and other state partners to make that loan. So, you know, we're, you know, maybe you're sitting in there at maybe 20% of this whole development cost.
Well, so you're in 20%. Well, I mean, I can go to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I can go to the bank with your 20% and get an 80% loan, probably.
You could.
So I don't need to have any money.
Yeah, well, you know, you do, because the bank's going to require it and the city's going to require it. And a lot of times they're going to, you know, you're going to have site control. You're going to be the one that buys the property. You're the one that's doing the design.
Yeah, but I'm going to use your money.
Well, you use it for a portion of it, yes. But they're also going to have to bring in private funding. So you have to be able to get the private loan because, you know, you have to put in multiple layers of dollars in order to get this $42 million project to come together. So you still got another, you know, after us, you still got another $32 million to get in there. And, you know, typically, I don't, you know, bank's not going to loan 80% on a multifamily development, especially at that level. So, you know, that's where tax credits come in, and they help out infuse additional dollars. And, you know, this one was a 4% tax credit project. So, you know, the owner's got to bring in, you know, some financing into that project to make it work. And so it takes a good financially strong developer in order to do a project of that level.
I got to go back to school and take economics and all this stuff because sounds to me like there's a lot of free money floating around. And if I play my cards right, I can snag some of it.
Well, I don't know if it's free money. I mean, you definitely have to work hard for it. And, you know, you got to turn around and guarantee those units for 55 years. So it's a long-term commitment. And, you know, your rents are capped. So your cash flow isn't like this, you know, real free-flowing cash flow. So you have to really monitor. You have to manage your properties well. And, you know, you're under a lot of restrictions, a lot of paperwork. And, but yeah, it's, you know, everything's capped. So, but, you know, you have to bring it. It just takes so many layers of funding to make these things work these days because construction is not cheap.
Well, that leads me to a different thing. And that is that, what are we going to do about the homeless problem? You know, we're in a period here in Redding of hyperinflation right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got agents writing offers $20,000 and more above the asking price, chasing the 300 or 400 homes that are currently on the market. In a typical market, there'd be 1,400. So we've got, you know, the prices are outrageous. First-time home buyers are screwed, and there's a gap between HUD-subsidized housing and those who perhaps don't qualify for HUD, but can't afford a house because they're too much,
mm-hmm,
because of,
mm-hmm,
the hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. What do I do with those people?
Well, if you're, you know, we are actually developing a program. It goes back to a program we had with our redevelopment agency where, you know, really having to buy down that gap. And we see that in the market where, you know, they're probably right now a first-time home buyer is looking at a house at 350 and we're, you know, they may only be able to afford
$250,000.
Yeah. So you got a $100,000 gap. Well, you know, we've just recently received some funding sources through the state that are going to allow us to create a larger gap for that program.
I want to hear more about that when we come back after this break. We're talking with Steve Bade, Deputy City Manager.
Tired of listening to people who are angry all the time?
Try listening to Armstrong and Getty from 9 to noon right after Free Fire Radio.
What is a hero? A hero serves when no one else is ready to. A hero helps everyone, never asking for any praise. They stand ready to do whatever is needed. They have picked up the mantle of heroism when we have needed it the most, and their tireless dedication can never be appreciated enough. We want to thank all of our local heroes. We could not get through these times without their courage. We thank you for everything that you do.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at kcnr1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
Join the conversation online in our chat room, kcnr1460.com.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. This is Ken Murray sitting in for Carl. What's the weather looking like in there?
We are looking at the warmest day for a while. It's going to be about 75 degrees today, so it's a great day for a picnic. Things are going to cool off just a little bit tomorrow to match what we saw yesterday, but we will have a windy Wednesday coming. That's going to be a high of 61, but speeds up to 40 miles per hour possibly on Wednesday. So if you have a high-profile vehicle, maybe leave that one at home, maybe bring the convertible, because we are looking at sunny skies throughout the rest of the week. The weather is brought to you by Shasta Gas Propane, 530-365-3793.
All right. We're talking this morning with Steve Bade, Deputy City Manager. Before the break, Steve, you were saying that there is a new program coming of gap financing. Can you tell me more about that, please?
Yeah, we realize in the community that there is, you know, limited inventory on the housing market, especially for those working families, and some of them would like to buy a home. And so we've seen this before, and I would say it's probably been the early 2000s when we had programs to match this sort of gap where you're looking at, you know, if the house is being sold around 350, they can only afford 250, then, you know, we're trying to define what we could use as a loan to fill that gap. And so our staff right now is designing that program, and we just recently received some state CalHome funding, and part of that funding is due to the car fire, and it's a result of that car fire that the state is infusing some dollars in our community to help us rebuild. And so we're going to use that to probably make up a program that's going to be available to developers to help buy down that price for that home so working families can get into to a house and actually be a home buyer.
You're going to buy down the development, or you're going to buy down the purchase?
We'd buy down the purchase with the secondary financing. So you really have there's a loan in the back end, but there's no payments due on that loan, and it's a home buyer loan basically. We've had those for many years, and so it allows the buyer to come in and stay within their budget to buy a home.
When do you hope to have this program rolled out?
Well, we're working on it right now. We're doing all the fine-tuning. We just received our agreement from the state, so we understand what the parameters are for the funding, and so we're folding those into existing programs. I would think that we'd probably get it before council sometime in April.
Okay. Another thing that falls under your portfolio of jobs, apparently, is the Stillwater Business Park.
Yeah.
What's going on out there?
Well, you know, I work with the city manager and also Janelle Gilbert in our office, and, you know, we work very closely with the EDC, Todd Jones, and really it's great to see there's a lot of interest in Stillwater right now. I think, you know, out of those, there's 16 properties out there, I think we have about 9 of them are either under either in a purchase sale agreement negotiation process, or they are, you know, already under a purchase and sale agreement and doing their due diligence, and or they've already closed escrow. So it's great to see that there's been some really good, energy out there. And, you know, everybody's trying to see if they can make something fit. It seems that the timing's just right for Stillwater.
When's somebody actually going to go out there and go to work in a building?
Well, I know Pace is the first building out there, Pace Engineering, and I would, my understanding is they're going to be, I think they're going to be done probably late summer, early fall with their facility, and then you'll have some people working out there every day. And then we have some other developers that have purchased land, and they're working on the design of their facilities right now. The city is working on getting the next layer of infrastructure completed. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we're staying ahead of the development interest and getting the remaining infrastructure items in and making sure that we're fulfilling our obligation on that part.
Okay, so you have 9 in some stage of offer, counter offer, escrow, mm-hmm. design, or something. Out of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Does the infrastructure exist out there for those 9 without completing the road and the bridge and the substation?
No, there's some of that work needs to be done, but we can be done in a timely fashion. It depends on how fast, you know, some of these developers move. Now, if they get a tenant, and then we're going to have to, you know, get moving along with the infrastructure. Or, you know, if they're a little bit ahead of us, then we could always negotiate an agreement with them to have them do the infrastructure and partner up and get that infrastructure done. So we're being responsive with those requests for sure.
I guess I'm having trouble getting my head wrapped around when actually I could drive out there and it looks like a functioning industrial park Is that next year or 2 years from now or when?
I would say that, in, you know, it's a small business park functioning right now. I mean, you have your first developers or, you know, developments underway. But I would say within the next 2 years, you're going to drive out there and see, you know, quite a bit of development going on and people actually working out in that area on a consistent basis.
You know, I've watched EDC for 50 years, and they are by turns aggressive and not aggressive, in my opinion, from what I've seen over the years. I mean, it ebbs and flows. Is EDC making anything happen?
Oh, I think they are. I think that, you know, Todd Jones has been the new president over there for about 6 months. And, you know, I think there's good momentum from the prior president and then or director. And then now Todd's taken that, and I think he's taken it to another level. He's responsive to requests. I think he, you know, does his due diligence when he's talking to potential developers that want to move, whether, you know, he's representing, you know, a number of areas up here. But, you know, Reading has a lot going on with it right now. And so I think the EDC does a good job of reaching out, connecting with city staff to check, is planning going to allow this? You know, what kind of, you know, building code issues may we have with this development proposal? So I think Todd has done a good job of really staying connected with the city and doing due diligence so that when these people come in and they actually have a proposal, it's something that can be streamlined. It's something that can actually be responded to well.
Well, you're describing responsiveness. I'm kind of interested in aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, responsiveness, I can sit in my desk and wait for the phone to ring. Aggressiveness is I go seek them out. Mm-hmm. What's going on in the seek them out world?
Well, I mean, I know that they're follow. I mean, if they get a request through the state, and you know, they have an application process, they're out there, go biz, and you can, you know, they can pull, you know, interested developers off that list and see if there's a good fit up here. And I know that they actively pursue those. And when they get calls or we get a call, we connect them. And so, you know, they're very. I mean, I think the responsiveness is important because you want to have a good response that shows that you're willing to be a friendly business community, and they represent that. And so we work hand in hand with them and to make sure that, you know, we want our community to be attractive and we want it to be attractive to new businesses, and they're helping with that through their, you know, of channels of connections at the state level and even the business community level. So I think that responsiveness is important, but also getting accurate information to them is very important. And that's where I think that they've really strived to do well with that lately.
Okay. Surplus property sales is under your portfolio. You work with Janelle Braithwaite. Or no.
Galbraith. Yeah.
I know her name.
Yeah.
You work with Janelle on that. The city acquires properties for a number of different reasons, not necessarily because they want them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to unload them. Why do you acquire stuff you don't want?
Well, you know, sometimes it's a derivative of redevelopment. Some of those properties that you're talking about are from our old redevelopment days. Some of it is, you know, you're purchasing right of way, and you have leftover property at the end of the, after that. You know, we typically don't go out and just buy property very much anymore. The surplus property we have is property we've had for years, and now, you know, we've been tasked to try and see if we can make a development opportunity out of those properties. So, yeah, if we're going to purchase property, it's something in regards to establishing right of way or improving infrastructure. It's typically why we would do it.
City surplus property, you just give it away to the first guy that comes along, or actually you get appraisals on it?
Yeah, correct.
Put it on the market, and somebody wants it, They can pay the appraised price or not buy it.
Correct. Yeah, we're trying to, you know, they're typically submitting a letter of interest to the city. They have a proposal, and we analyze that proposal, see if it fits within the goals and objectives of the city, and see if we can develop a partnership from there. And, you know, at the a lot of it, we try to create some sort of housing opportunity, you know, trying to get more housing units developed out of some of those surplus properties where it fits other properties. Sometimes it's difficult to develop property, and we got to be really creative. But
okay. We're going to take a break. We'll be back momentarily.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Orchard Nutrition Center, your local neighborhood health food store. We are dedicated to the healthy lifestyle, and we strive for a high standard to carry organic, GMO-free, and clean healthy products.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
We have certified nutritionists on staff that take pride in helping you. Supporting local, we are all in it together. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. This month's review is Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary. The Perdomo Reserve is a medium to full-bodied blend, giving off notes of dark cocoa, espresso, and ending with a progressive complexity of mineral-rich zestiness. Come down to the shop for your Perdomo Reserve today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, or visit us on Instagram at Tobacco and Brew.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
That is weird music. Welcome back. This is Ken Murray. I'm sitting in for Carl Lindebaugh today. I'm talking with Steve Bade, the deputy city manager. At the top of the hour, after the news, I'm going to be talking to a former FBI agent, find out what really goes on inside the inside dark world. Big deals coming up this week. On Wednesday, the downtown streets are reopened. And it causes me to think. In 1970, I worked across the street from the Cascade Theater at the Sears catalog store. And they were building the Mount Shasta Mall in a Manzanita patch. Everybody was wondering who'd ever go over there. Enterprise, not even in Redding, because it wasn't in Redding at the time. And I-5 had reshaped the structure of the town when the old Highway 99 or 273 came right through downtown, all north-south traffic, you know, traversed our downtown area with the advent of I-5. I guess I-5 went in 68 or something like that. That all stopped, and it caused a problem for the merchants. Some developer saw an opportunity, or thought they saw an opportunity, and built the Mount Shasta Mall. When they built the Mount Shasta Mall, there was overwhelming community support. I mean, overwhelming, to put a mall over the downtown streets, three blocks of downtown. That's the way we're going to save our downtown core. And it happened. Okay? The roof was put on. And years later, it became the problem with the downtown mall from day one was that it was in fragmented ownership. Everybody owned their own store. Sam Nathan owned a shoe store. Chuck Zink owned the gold exchange. I mean, this guy owned this and that and the other thing. And the difference between a roofed over downtown, quote, mall, close quote, and a regular mall was that in a regular mall, the mall sets the hours of operation and sale dates and events. In the downtown mall, nobody could agree on anything because they were all private entrepreneurs. They didn't have sales on the same dates. Stores were open at different hours. It was a disaster. And the disaster survived for a number of years until the roof was removed. And a plan was made, which is coming to fruition this Wednesday. What's happening this Wednesday?
Well, Ken, the biggest thing Wednesday is that the streets, you know, Market Street, Butte, and Yuba Street are going to open. And so we're holding a ribbon cutting event at 11 o'clock on Wednesday. It'll be live streamed so the community can enjoy that as we have the mayor and city manager and introduce that the streets that have not been open since 1972.
Is Market going to be open in two directions?
Portions of it will be, as you enter Market Street from the Tehama entrance, it'll just be one way southbound until you get to Butte Street. Between Butte and Yuba Street, that is a two-way portion of Market Street. And then as you utilize Butte, Butte has a combination of two-way and one-way, and then Yuba Street has both two-way directionals on that one.
How long is it going to take me to figure out if I'm driving the right way or wrong way on any one of those streets?
Well, I don't think it'll take too long. There's some good signage out you know, out in the space. But then we also are going to do a video, a tutorial to help the community navigate through. It's not difficult. It's pretty easy. So, you know, look at the signage. And, you know, there's some elements in that street design that are going to make you slow down a bit. There's raised intersections there's narrowing of the streets. And so, you know, vehicles and people are going to slow down just because of the natural design of the street.
Can people eat out on the sidewalk?
Yes, that's one, you know, nice element with this, the design of the street. There's very large outdoor spaces that are right next to these storefronts that have been, you know, locked down since the 70s. So this is going to be a nice amenity to downtown.
Are you aware of any new retail merchants that will be in this new street?
Not yet, but I know that there's a good buzz out there, but nothing has been landed new. I know that there are some businesses looking to relocate. They already have a space in there, and they're actually looking to relocate and get a little closer to the street, get some better outdoor space. And but nothing official. I just know there's a lot of interest out there in that space. So I think people are waiting to see, hey, what does it look like? What's going to look like when these fences are finally down? So I think they're just patiently waiting.
The ribbon cutting is going to be where?
It'll be held at the intersection of Butte and Market Street. So right on the, you know, it's basically right on that southwest corner of that intersection, right outside of the old IOF building, right on that corner.
Well, you're not expecting a crowd of people.
No, we're really wanting the community to watch the live stream event.
How do I watch it on live stream?
So they'll have it on Facebook Live, will be where they're going to stream it. Now, Viva's hosting that. We will have it also posted on our City of Reading website so that the community can go on there and log on and enjoy the event with everybody else.
Going to be music or dancing girls or anything?
Well, there will be a busker down on the corner, on the south portion of Market and Yuba.
There'll be a what?
On the corner, it'll be probably just a solo person down there playing the guitar or doing some music right at the corner. So we're trying to show the community how some of the amenities are out there. So we'll get some of that live stream on there, and they'll see how this new space will complement downtown.
What's the worst part of your job?
Let's see. You know what? I don't know. I don't really have any bad. You know what? I guess we just burn it out. That's a tough question. I really love my job, and it takes a lot of energy and a lot of time. But, you know, I think the toughest part is just trying to get, you know, I try to get every dollar in this community I can. And that is a challenge sometimes. But we keep battling through and trying to make it happen.
Do you write the grants?
Well, sometimes, yes, we do. It depends on, you know, how many staff members we have available to do that. But a lot of the grants we do write them.
Okay. Of the grants you write, how many get accepted?
I would say we're probably 9 out of 10. We're pretty successful in them.
And that's without a professional grant writer.
Yes.
I mean, there are professional grant writers. Mm-hmm. The city's never had one that I know of.
No, we've just recently, in these last few projects, we've had, we've partnered with some consultants on these big projects where we just didn't know. And so that was very helpful on Market Center, very helpful on Block 7, out there, Center of Hope. So, yeah, it's been very helpful when we do get a consultant. But, you know, if they're simple enough, we're definitely have experienced staff to help that out.
Now, when you redid this Market Street, I mean, there have been problems downtown with storm waters for years. Is this all fixed now?
Yes. And so we've actually had some good storm or rain events recently to, you know, test some of that infrastructure. And now it's all completed. Yeah, it was well designed. There's some good drainage improvements. You know, we redid a number of infrastructure items in downtown, a lot of antiquated sewer lines and storm drain. And so, yes, we're ready for the next event. So we'll see how we do.
So it's all brand new.
Mm-hmm. It is.
How exciting.
Very exciting.
So on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, I can go on Facebook and see your smiling face?
Well, you know, I try to stay out of the spotlight. So I'm going to, you know, have the mayor and the city manager, and we have John Truitt with Viva. So we'll put those folks out there. They've been working on this a long time, too, and so I'll be in the background.
You'll be there.
And I'll be there for sure.
Because if anything goes wrong, it's going to be your fault.
Yes, exactly. So I got to make sure it goes right.
No dancing girls, no band, but you're going to have a guitar player with his, you know, taking tips.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. A little European flair.
Sounds like a heck of a party. Steve, I appreciate your being here this morning. Thank you for all you do for the city.
Thank you, Ken.
We're going to be back after this break for the news with... he's a strange fella, but you're going to like him. We'll be back with this former FBI agent right after this.
The Supreme Court nomination went nowhere when the then-Republican-led Senate refused to hold hearings. GOP Senator Charles Grassley chaired the Judiciary Committee at that time.
Yes, it's true that I didn't give Judge Garland a hearing. I also didn't mischaracterize his record. I didn't attack his character. I didn't go through his high school yearbook. I didn't make his wife leave the hearing in tears.
A reference to the treatment afforded some Republican Supreme Court nominees, notably now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The Supreme Court declining to intervene in a fight over former President Trump's tax records. The High Court declining to block the turnover of those records to a New York prosecutor, Manhattan D.A. Cyrus Vance Jr. Donald Trump will make his first post-presidential appearance at a conservative gathering in Florida next weekend.
Yes, it's true that I didn't give...
After keeping a relatively low profile in Palm Beach, Florida since leaving the White House, Trump will be speaking at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's being held in Orlando this year and will feature several former Trump administration officials and other Republicans with close ties to the former president. Trump is expected to use next Sunday's speech to talk about the future of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Flags across Florida being lowered to half-staff in honor of one of the state's most famous residents, Rush Limbaugh. May be gone, but he is certainly not forgotten. Updating Wall Street, stocks in the red. Right now, the Dow down about 28 points. The NASDAQ Composite Index, 251 points lower for a loss of close to 2%. And the S&P is down 26 points. More on these stories at townhall.com.
In 1901, a woman by the name of Annie Taylor climbed into a barrel so that she could ride that barrel over Niagara Falls, the first person to do so. The reason for her crazy endeavor? She was struggling to make ends meet, and she was hoping for fame and financial security. It's Ryan from United Faith Mortgage, a faith and family mortgage team that tries to improve your financial outlook without having to ship you over a 170-foot waterfall. Our mortgage team happens to be an arm of a bigger company who is a direct lender, which means our company gets to use its own money and make its own decisions within its own walls. There's no middleman. This advantage often allows us to get you a better rate, which can save you monthly and lifelong money through a refinance, or help you with a cash-out refinance, cashing out some of your home's equity to use for life. We are United Faith Mortgage.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp, 25 Noble Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to animalistconsumeraccess.org. Corporate animalist number 1335, bracket animalist number 65233. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, or Utah.
Palestinian leaders trying to clean up their act in the run-up to elections, reporter Felice Friedson explains.
The Palestinian Authority notified the White House that all factions are prepared to accept the state along 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as its capital. Unity is imperative in anticipation of the first Palestinian election since 2005. The letter also asserted all factions' respect for the Palestine Liberation Organization as its sole voice and espouses popular peaceful resistance until a state is born. The letter tried to address the uncertainty over what will happen if Hamas, an Iranian-backed terror proxy, defeats the Western-backed Fatah Palestinian Authority. Aiming to clean up the PA's human rights image, Abbas banned police detentions related to speech and political freedoms. I'm Felice Friedson, Town Hall News, Jerusalem.
News and analysis at themedialine.org and townhall.com. There's not much you can actually buy with it, at least not right now, but the total value of Bitcoin in circulation has hit $1 trillion.
The cryptocurrency hit that new record high on Friday, even with the milestone analysts warn Bitcoin is still speculative and call it a poor hedge against any fall in stock prices. The price of Bitcoin has risen almost 200% in the last 3 months. Bitcoin has gained notice as more companies signal digital currency could eventually gain wide acceptance as a means of payment. However, the vast majority of those who have acquired Bitcoin treat it as a commodity like gold, as few places accept it in exchange for goods or services. George Bonzani reporting.
The $1.9 trillion Biden COVID relief package on the agenda. When the House Budget Committee meets today, there could be a vote in the House by the end of the week. And if that package is approved, that proposal then would head to the Senate. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. And now, Carl and Linda Bott. This is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning. This is Ken Murray sitting in for Carl and Linda Bott. What's the weather looking like in the other room over there? Is it colder or hotter than it is in here?
I'm fairly certain it's going to be warmer because we have a lot of equipment in here.
Oh, how about outside?
Outside, we're looking at a high of 75 degrees today, which will be our warmest for the work week, but it's going to be pretty temperate throughout the week. We're looking at 71 tomorrow, 69 Thursday, 65 Friday. Our coolest day is going to be our windy Wednesday with lots of wind up to 40 miles per hour. But if you're looking at possibly opening the windows or getting a picnic out, if you're not too terribly allergic to springtime, because a lot of the world is starting to pollinate. But today is looking like a great day for a picnic.
Okay, thank you. Well, in the studio with me now, I have the inimitable John Rieger. And good morning, John.
Good morning, Kim.
John, you've had a number of jobs, but before I get into your jobs, where did you come from? Where did you grow up? What did your dad do? Where did you go to school? That kind of stuff.
Born and raised in West Virginia, by golly. So I'm a testimony to many years of inbreeding and many generations. And then went to school, Arizona State, and ultimately, after working in the Phoenix area for a brief period of time, spending some time in the U.S. Air Force, I had an opportunity because of my education to join the FBI in January 4th of 1971, and did so. Spent 26 years with them, retiring after being offered a position as a bankruptcy trustee in Northern California, and have continued to do that until I finally went off panel last year.
All right. And so every time I think of West Virginia, I think everybody there is a coal miner. Is that true?
Not quite, but there are a lot of them. And
so you're not a coal miner?
No, no, nor was the family. But at any rate, no.
When you say you had an opportunity to join the FBI, did they recruit you or did you just go apply?
I had heard about it. I don't want to say they recruited me. They sought me out specifically, but they opened up a program that where they wanted people with an advanced scientific background. They wanted a few agents that they ultimately wanted to end up back in Washington, D.C. At their laboratory, and I was just finishing a master's degree in genetics, and so it looked like I was going to have to spend four more years getting a PhD, and I had been in hopes of going into some kind of cancer research. Ultimately, I was tired of being broke and poor and working nights for the phone company, and this opportunity came along, and I figured it would be an interesting try. It was never my avocation to do anything like that, but so I gave it a shot and worked into a wonderful career.
So did you go to training at Quantico?
I did. It was the old academy. It was J. Edgar Hoover, Mr. Hoover was alive for approximately about a year and 4 months until he passed in May of 72. So, yeah, the old academy, it's still there, but it used to be an old bunch of brick buildings with eight-man dorms, and we also used the Marine Corps barracks. So that was where our training was, and it was augmented downtown at the old post office in downtown Washington, D.C. So that's where the 16 weeks of initial training occurred.
How does this compare to boot camp?
Somewhat. It was more professional than boot camp, and certainly I was enlisted when I was in the Air Force, so it was you didn't get yelled at quite as much, and you had to wear a shirt and tie, so things were a little bit different, but so it was much nicer.
What was Hoover's deal with the suit and tie? He had a rule about that, didn't he?
It was draconian. In all candor, and there's many stories about it, but and when he finally passed, I put away my 10 Gant long sleeve white button down collar shirts and never wore them again. So, but there were some really interesting stories, and I can tell one quick one that I had been after a web station briefly in Washington, D.C., I got sent to Portland, Oregon, and there was going to be a big law enforcement conference in Lincoln City on the beach. And as part of this, Mr. Hoover was going to fly in on a helicopter and land on the beach and meet with all the sheriffs and the chiefs of police for the state. And a lot of us young agents were dragging giant logs to make huge bonfires on the beach for basically a clam bake or something that evening. And as Mr. Hoover came in his helicopter, he asked who were the people that were dragging the logs and building the fires. And somebody told him that it was some of his young agents. And he immediately told the individual to tell us to put our coats back on. So he could be a tough act to follow, as it were. So,
what idiot would land a helicopter on a beach and blow sand all over everybody?
Didn't help the clams, I'm sure, but we weren't allowed to eat in those days, so it didn't matter to me.
After you got out of Quantico, where all were you stationed?
Washington, D.C., Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, then Redding, California. And I was fortunate enough to come up here and absolutely loved being up here, and every time anybody attempted to transfer me, give me a promotion, do anything that would cause me to have to leave here permanently, even though I would go on numerous assignments, TDY many times for some periods of time. I was able through a lot of luck, quite frankly, because it was a requirement back then that you actually had to move to one of what we considered the top 10 field offices, New York City, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, L.A., that Chicago, you were required to have that in your resume within 7 years. And I hadn't officially had that. So I was very fortunate that by the time they got around to try to transfer me to one of those places, I had enough seniority that if they would have done it, I could have transferred back within a year back to the Sacramento Division, which is part of Redding. So they waived me out of that program, and I got to spend my whole career here in Northern California.
How long have we had an FBI office here in Redding?
Probably forever. Sacramento became a field office, I think, in 67. Before that, it was a part of San Francisco Division. They break it down into judicial districts in California, and there's four of them. There's the Southern, there's the Central, which is L.A., and then there's San Francisco, and then there's Sacramento, which is the Eastern District of California. So they made a field office finally in 67 in Sacramento. And but I know there were agents here. I've heard of them and heard stories about them way before I got here. So they actually, there was a post of duty here, I'm sure, in the early 60s.
What does an FBI agent do in Redding?
the old adage, a resident agent spends much of his time as resident, and that's not quite true. But what ultimately, it's you're a jack of all trades, master of none. That was the lovely thing about being up here. Number one, you work with incredible smaller departments. Everybody seemingly gets along really well. But everything, you've got all of the borders with Oregon, with Nevada. So any interstate crime, you've got it. Any theft from any government institution, back in the day, there weren't other, these other government agencies did not have law enforcement personnel like they do now. The Forest Service didn't, none of them did. And so anything that would happen, be it a murder in Lassen Park, do you name it, it was the local FBI agent. Along with, we usually average 2-3 bank robberies a year. Segued into bankruptcies. We had bankruptcy, we had white collar crime, we had frauds, we had you name it, and we had it. One of each.
How many agents are there in Redding?
I am told, I believe there are 3 now. There were times when I was the only person up here. There were times there were 2 of us up here.
All right. We're talking with John Rieger, former FBI agent. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. If you have a question, the phone number is 605-4567. Take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, Mountain Mama. Take me home, country road.
Tired of listening to people who are angry all the time?
Try listening to Armstrong and Getty from 9 to noon right after Free Fire Radio.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Don't miss This Morning with Gordon Deal, followed by the Sue McClain News Hour, Free Fire Radio, and Armstrong and Getty on KCNR.
If it's someone who has something to say about the North State, you'll hear it here.
Welcome back. This is Ken Murray. My guest this morning is unemployed gentleman by the name of John Rieger. He used to have a job, and now he doesn't. But, one of the jobs he had was he was an FBI resident agent here in Reading. You know, I know a great deal about the FBI, John, because I watch TV a lot. And I know the minute you walk into a police station, they all hate you. Because I see that on TV all the time.
We do seem to have that that image on TV anymore, as far as that we're the bad guys that are always the onerous three-piece suited individuals. That,
trying to take credit from a hard working
cop. Absolutely. Try to do whatever we can to anybody and make a press release. So that's absolutely correct. But it's incorrect. But there is that perception sometimes. And there can be interagency fights and jealousies. And there have been forever. Normally it's in big departments, LAPD, San Francisco, New York City. On the local level, as far as the agent to officer level, everybody gets along great. It's when you get into the hierarchy of any agency that both politics and egos seem to go into play, and then everything else goes out the window as far as trying to do the job and getting somebody in jail or solving a crime, which is such a shame. But I never had any of those issues to my knowledge. Maybe people talked a lot behind my back, but the agencies up here in Northern California, it was absolutely a joy for the 24 years I was up here. Whether it was a two-man department in Tule Lake to a substation in Happy Camp to every single sheriff's office and police department, and I've still maintained some wonderful relationships with the old guard cops. So it's been wonderful.
What was the biggest case you ever handled?
Oh boy,
here,
Well. I was going to say, if you went back, I was stationed in Portland on Thanksgiving Eve, just getting ready to go out for a drink at a little restaurant with a bunch of young agents when D.B. Cooper jumped out of his lovely jet. So I was in Portland when that occurred, and that was a case that I chased around and thought we had solved 150 times, but we didn't. Down here, had some incredibly big cases, some of which were never known about. Everything from
Tell me something nobody knows. Is it a secret?
Yeah, no, it's not a secret, other than the fact that it was never solved. So why publicize something that was never solved? But we had extortions to the Amtrak trains coming through Reading, where somebody said they were going to blow up one of the trestles and kill all the people on board if they weren't given X number of dollars, and
what did you do about that?
There were requirements. Obviously, we had phone calls we had to make. We had things we had to do, and then we were to take a deadheaded train with a large quantity of money. And when we saw a signal someplace between here and Klamath Falls, Oregon, we were to drop the money off of the train. Mm-hmm. We attempted to do that three times. The person never, they could be listening right now. Mm-hmm. They failed to come through, and we failed to drop the money off to them, and no trestles got blown up. There were a lot of really fascinating larger cases. One was a bank manager's wife in a small town in Siskiyou County who was cut up, thrown in a trunk of a car, left to die up on the side of a mountain. And it was not meant that she was to be cut up, But she fought like hell, and she was supposed to be just kidnapped. And then when the husband, who was the manager of a local bank, came home, he was to then go back to the bank, withdraw a great deal of money, and leave it at a location where notes were left and whatnot. And unfortunately, she fought like the dickens, and none of that happened. And it took me about a year and a half to solve that case take that one to trial. That was back probably in 1979. It was on Halloween Eve, actually. The guy was dressed up like a Halloween clown when he went into the to the bank manager's home. But so there have been, and again, forgive me, I'm old, but there have been a lot of really fascinating, interesting cases. Another one that comes to mind, if you want to keep me rambling, I got another great
ramble.
Okay, this is a good ramble. So there's a mountain outside of Red Bluff, California, and there's a little cabin that sits on the top of it, and totally unrelated, an individual in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, receives a package saying, if you get this package, it must mean I'm dead. And there was a map in it. And the map was to a location to the top of this mountain outside of Red Bluff, California. Simultaneous with that, there's some hunters that are hunting on the side of that mountain, and they find a body. Well, they find a skeleton, nothing left, with some bullet holes in his head.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out it was that individual who has sent somehow or another through a third party that if you don't hear from me in 6 months, mail this to a certain person in Philadelphia. It caused us to get search warrants to literally do a treasure hunt with that kind of specificity to where stand at this tall digger pine tree, walk 37 paces to the north, dig. We found over $1 million worth of diamonds, Krugerrands, high-end gold watches, and one hole in one of the three locations where obviously, the bad guys, this guy was involved heavily in drugs, and he'd converted the drug money into precious commodities. And ultimately, they had found some money in the one hole and then obviously murdered him. So that was a pretty fascinating case. But
why did he communicate with somebody in Philadelphia?
He had a friend back there, and this guy that was out here in the Tehama County area was originally from Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia FBI had been working a large drug case back there, and all of a sudden this came up, and it segued clear into little Hooterville, California out here, and here we were. And so it's amazing just the things that have started here that have sent me to everywhere from London to Edinburgh, Scotland, working on cases to Mexico City. And they started in Reading. So there have been some fascinating. I've been very, very fortunate and blessed that that in a way I never had to grow up for 26 years, and I got to play cops and robbers with some wonderful human beings.
Let's go back to this great train robbery thing. Now, okay, so somebody said they were going to blow up a trestle for an Amtrak passenger train or something, some kind of train, if you didn't give them a bunch of money. So you got a bunch of money together.
I'm not saying whether we got a bunch of money together or we got a bunch of paper together, but we got something together, yes.
You got something together.
A satchel, yes.
You got a satchel to jump off a train.
Yes, sir.
How many agents were involved?
Oh, my gosh. The first go-around when contact was made, needless to say, Southern Pacific has their own investigators. Right. They were involved. There are not many of them, but they were. We probably had 30 FBI agents, a helicopter. We had chase cars everywhere. We had people stationed in woods. There were 30 to 40, remembering back on that.
So how does that work? You get on the phone to D.C. and say, I got to have help.
Yeah, it actually the threat came through Amtrak. So Amtrak then gets a hold of the powers to be, the FBI, and all of a sudden it's all put in motion where people come. Obviously, Reading doesn't have those kind of resources. So ultimately, agents, just like I would do whenever there'd be a big case, a bombing, whatever, in some other municipality. They'd draw me out of here, and I'd leave for 30 days. Well, same thing. Agents would come up from San Francisco, from L.A., from wherever, and work here for a week.
What year was this?
Boy, I retired in 96, so it was before that, probably maybe in the early 90s, I would think, something like that.
How could we not notice 30 FBI agents arriving in town with their own helicopter?
Well, and if you in this, you bring up another subject, another big case, and it was just right when I had retired, when the cardiologist at Shasta Regional Medical Center for that giant fiasco that came down as far as going in and doing search warrants on Shasta Regional Medical Center. There had to have been 50 FBI agents in town that night.
How come we don't? You never see them.
We're very, very good. Stealthy.
Sneaky.
We're stealthy. There's no doubt about it. The quick story on that, which I'll never forget, if I may.
No,
you got a break.
You can tell this story you'll never forget when we come back from this break for the news.
A bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your Sleep Number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. Don't miss our weekend special. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed. Plus special financing and free premium delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Albee from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 1460.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Zip on over to Drip, now open at 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson, next to Anytime Fitness. Drip features healthy and delicious drinks and shakes. Drip offers energy teas packed with antioxidants, delicious full meal replacement shakes, coffee loaded with protein, power oats, energy drinks, and so much more. Drip is open Monday through Friday from 7 to 7 and weekends 8 to 4. Stop by today, 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson. Zip on over to Drip.
Free Fire Radio. It's a target-rich environment.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent.
Welcome back. This is Ken Murray, my guest this morning. John Rieger, he used to be employed doing important things, and now he's just fools around a lot. Vacations, stuff. Somebody came in on the chat room, John, when you were in the FBI and you made this discovery of all these Krugerrands and diamonds and whatever down in Red Bluff. What happened to the loot?
Yeah, that ultimately under the federal forfeiture acts and whatnot, because we were able to prove that they were ill-gotten gains from drug dealing, they were sold, and the money then went into the coffers of both the federal government, and also because the Tehama County Sheriff's Office assisted in everything that was done on the top of this mountain, and it involved a number of days. I was able, and I'm shooting from the hip on this thing because it was many, many years ago, but I believe that we wrote them out a check for, I think, over $100,000 of the money just to put back into the sheriff's office. So it was a win-win for everybody in that sense.
Okay. So you retired from the FBI and became a bankruptcy trustee for the U.S. Department of Justice.
That is correct. And I had actually worked a number of humongous bankruptcy fraud cases where people were hiding great deals of money and assets and properties and whatnot. And the old-time U.S. trustee or trustee that had been here in Reading, a gentleman named Bill Conway, who's dead now, he and I had become friends. And in working these cases that actually he was the trustee on, but I was the FBI agent on, so I'd learned a little bit about bankruptcy and bankruptcy fraud. And it was suggested that if I was ever ready to retire, I did not have to retire. I was over 50, so I was able to retire, but I could have worked up to another 7 years. Retirement in the FBI is mandatory at age 55. You can waive it to 57, depending. And so I could have worked a number of years, but I decided to put my hat in the ring and see if, in fact, maybe it was time for a career change. And it sounded pretty fascinating to get involved in other people's issues. So I applied after lots of different interviews and whatnot by individuals in San Francisco. I was offered the position, and at that point, I retired from the FBI and started another career.
What's a bankruptcy trustee do?
They administer bankruptcies. That's easy enough, but ultimately, there's many different types of bankruptcy. The most common is a Chapter 7, which is a liquidation bankruptcy, and every state has different sets of codes that afford people the opportunity to keep certain things, and they cannot keep certain things when they file, but they can get rid of their debt. And all bankruptcies are federal. And probably over the 23 years that I worked in the bankruptcy field, I think I administered some 19,000 bankruptcies. So lots of folks, lots of businesses. And ultimately, you liquidate what cannot be exempted and give those monies to creditors. That's the purpose. And you make sure it's all done legally and fairly and nobody's cheating the system.
But people do cheat the system.
Absolutely, just like everything in life.
What a jaundiced view you have, John. How do they cheat the system in bankruptcy? Tell me, give me an example of a bankruptcy case where somebody just blatantly tried to screw the government and you caught them.
You know, it happens. I won't say it. The majority of the individuals that file bankruptcy, there's an awful lot of, the old adage there, go out, but for the grace of God, and it's very true, sometimes in the criminal field and certainly in the bankruptcy field, but there are a lot of good people that the bad things happen to them. Mom and dad have worked their whole life. They don't have a lifeline of much, and all of a sudden they have a catastrophic health care issue, and they're in debt for $500,000. Guess mm-hmm. what? They can file bankruptcy and get rid of that medical debt. So there are a lot of decent, good people that are get stuck in situations where a domino effect. Somebody else files bankruptcy and they are a subcontractor and they get stuck with whatever the downfall is. So, but back to what you ask about the criminality of it, I was able to prove a number of big cases where individuals, sometimes they're going through a divorce, they're very heated, they hide things from each other, they try to. Those you can find out about them, but we've had cases, and I've had personal cases where I've had to testify and actually help with the search warrants when the FBI have gone out and done search warrants on people on my bankruptcy cases, where individuals have placed large tracts of ranch property in bankruptcy, and they've claimed it was a boy's ranch. That happened in one case, and the individual got 18 years in prison that did that. But it took me a good year to prove that up. There have been numerous cases like that to where people usually can hide things in other people's names, in straw buyers, straw owners, friends, other family members, to where it's not titled in your name, but you really do own it. That happens quite often.
How do you prove someone doesn't own something that isn't in their name? Or does own something that isn't in their name, I guess.
A million records checks. It goes back to, and that's the great segue that leaving the FBI, a trustee along with everything else, one of the jobs, you're an accountant, you're kind of a junior judge because people have to appear before you in court and you place them under oath and you actually depose them as to what it is they've shown on their petition that they filed, all of their assets and liabilities and whatnot. But the other thing you do is you're an investigator, and so you investigate. And you've got a document that they've had to file with the court that shows you all the creditors and all the people that they're trying to wipe debt out on. And you can go back to every one of those individuals and you can look at the records that they might have that caused them to loan this individual money. And it's amazing what it shows mm-hmm. that maybe that person didn't want to know about. Plus, there's disgruntled people that are not getting paid because somebody's filed bankruptcy. Those people usually are close to the debtor, and they can furnish lots of information. There's ex-wives. There's a million ways that, along with all the public records, bank records and whatnot, that can lead you to other assets, and that's what happens.
Was it fun?
Absolutely. You don't want to say fun in the sense of is law enforcement work fun. It's incredibly fulfilling and enjoyable. And yes, I tried to be fair with everybody. And I'm sure there's people that would say that I wasn't, that I was too mean-spirited. I was something at some point in time. But in general, I tried to treat everybody just as if it could happen to me, if they're playing fairly with the system.
Well, yeah, but you don't run into people that are playing fairly with the system in any of your jobs. You're running into people who are playing unfairly. And I'm excluding those normal people who have to file bankruptcies for the reasons you enumerated, such as medical and a death or whatever. But the rest of them aren't playing fair.
Well, there's some, certainly, I dare say, that truly are gaming the system. It's probably that there's criminality. There may be, it may be 5 to 10% that are gaming the system, another 10 or so percent. And when I say gaming the system, by the time I retired from this second career, I was seeing some people for the third time, meaning that they were filing bankruptcy for the third time. You wonder how that can happen. Well, it used to be the law was every 6 years you could file a Chapter 7. Again, there's other codes that allow you to file even more often than that. But so the problem is the credit card companies and a lot of other lenders were still lending the money back to these people. And if there, and there are people that if, in fact, you're going to give it to them for free and they can file and get rid of that debt every 6 years, they're going to do it.
We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with John Rieger and his entertaining story style right after this.
Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
Pop some popcorn, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready to celebrate local filmmakers with the 13th Annual Sundial Film Festival. Happening March 6th, the Sundial Film Festival is presented by the Active 2030 Club of Reading. The event has gone virtual this year, so you can enjoy the array of films from the comfort of your own home. It's free to view the Sundial Film Festival happening March 6th at 6 p.m. All you have to do is go to sundialfilmfestival.com and RSVP. The 13th Annual Sundial Film Festival happening March 6th online at sundialfilmfestival.com.
Slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
You don't have to be a Native American to access quality health care. Reading Rancheria's Churn Creek Healthcare and Central Valley Healthcare are open to anyone with Medicare, Medi-Cal, or Partnership Health. Our health system never charges co-pays, deductibles, share of costs, or even a sliding fee scale. Patients never have to pay to access quality, compassionate health care. Reading Rancheria Tribal Health System, changing how health care is delivered. Call us today to schedule an appointment.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Explore your world right from home with Turtle Bay TV.
Daintree is a jungle carpet python.
Featuring free educational and distance learning content for a virtual experience the whole family will enjoy.
Welcome to the vault.
Start streaming now at turtlebay.org.
If it's someone who has something to say about the North State, you'll hear it here.
Welcome back to KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. This is Ken Murray filling in for Carl and Linda Bodd, and I'm talking with John Rieger, former FBI agent, actually stationed here in Reading, and subsequent to his retirement, a bankruptcy trustee for the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, they teach you how to be sneaky in the FBI.
You bet. And discreet, too. That was Mr. Hoover's mantra, was you. If you're,
well, I understand why he had to be discreet. But no, I won't ask you about whether he wore a dress, but I want to know the sneakiest thing you ever did.
there were things maybe that the statute of limitations hasn't run on because they've not been discovered yet. So there's lots of stories over two beers I could tell, but I'm not going to. One of an interesting ones, when I was a young agent in Portland, back in the day, there were gambling was a huge thing, organized crime gambling type operations, and we had learned of one of them in Portland, and it involved a large luggage company that was actually the backs of the rooms were being used for gambling, as far as bookies and whatnot, the old stuff that you don't hear about anymore. You don't hear about that stuff because gambling's basically legal most everywhere now, but in the day it wasn't, and we had wiretaps up and everything going on, and we're doing surveillance, as all of us young agents are, and we're changing out our four-door sedans with black wall tires and following different crooks around everywhere.
Well, everybody else has white wall tires.
Exactly, so we were very discreet back in the day, but at any rate, we and the wiretaps are up, and all of a sudden, on one of the wiretaps, we hear discussion with one of the bad guys that they thought they were being followed by the FBI. And what had happened is the bad guy had gotten a license plate number off of one of our vehicles, and it happened where we were in such short supply of using vehicles that we're using our personal vehicles and trading them off, too, when we're surveilling back in the day before we had lots of budgets. And ultimately, the individual had gone to DMV, which you could do back in that day, and found out a name. It wasn't me, but it was another agent. Mm-hmm. And then the guy had called the local FBI agent and asked, is John Smith there? Well, no, John Smith works for us, but he's out in the field right now. Can you would like to leave a message? So the crook, he panics, and he calls his attorney while he's being tapped and says, oh, my God, I just determined that John Rieger, or whoever, John Smith in this case, is surveilling me. And the attorney commences to, on the tape, to lambasting his client, saying, listen, the FBI is so good. If the FBI was surveilling you, you would never know it. They're like ghosts. You don't have to worry. The guy said, okay, I feel much better now. And he upped his business, his illegal business. He tripled it because of his attorney telling him how good we were. So the mystique lived on back in the day. But so that was an interesting story, I thought.
John, you've had a kind of an exciting career. Now you're retired.
I am. I've still got a number of bankruptcy cases that I'm administering that involve lawsuits and whatnot that'll take probably another year or two to go.
We've got Mike on the phone. Good morning, Mike. How can we help you?
Hey, Ken. Nice to hear your voice in the past.
Thank you.
Considering all the stuff that's going on in our world, and we all know that, you know, the 99% of the FBI agents are good, but the 1%, the 1% that's going on right now, the things, you know, where they take Hunter Biden's laptop and have it for a year and sit on it. What's your opinion on the national optics of FBI agents there?
Thanks, Mike.
Good question. And I can tell you, again, this is, again, a historic perspective because I'm not in the Bureau anymore and haven't been for some 24 years. But I still network, and we have retired agents associations, and we get together and have steak fries once a year when we can. And we talk a lot. And I also do talk with some of the younger people because I've got my own PI practice and my own fraud examination practice too here in Reading. And so I get referred things by former FBI agents, some of which are more recent retirees. I can tell you that almost to a man and woman, we're sickened by what has occurred vis-a-vis the James Comey situation. And I even gave him a great deal of deference and break when initially what happened back when former President Clinton met with the then Attorney General, I believe, in one of their jets on a tarmac in Phoenix, Arizona, and that was while Hillary was under investigation, and that poisoned the well completely to where at first Comey had no choice but stepping into that particular situation. But what has happened, and with a very, very small few, has just sickened, everybody that's retired, or 99 point whatever percent of all FBI agents that are just trying to do a job, sometimes get shot, as a couple people did down in Florida here recently and killed. And it's really tough. It just like it is for local law enforcement right now. It's got to be so tough when 99.9% of law enforcement on the local level, which is a much tougher job in this environment, are watching daily headlines as it relates to something that has gone bad rather than the 10,000 things that have gone good. So we're all disheartened by it. It hurts. It hurts if you bleed blue and if you believe in good law enforcement.
Okay. Thanks, Mike, for the call. What's the future hold for John?
For who? For me?
Yeah.
You
have all this experience, all these stories. You have grandchildren to tell these stories to?
Yeah, I don't think they care. I've got three grandsons from 11 to 26. But I'm doing some nonprofit work. I've been on the Empire Recovery Center board for the last 6 years trying to help out there. I volunteer out at the VA home and dearly love working with all of the old Korean and World War II and Vietnam vets, both male and female. Haven't been able to get into there because of COVID, and now I've had my shots. So I'm hoping that they open that back up and let some of us get in. But that's just doing a lot of nonprofit, helping out, giving back some, and trying to keep my two brain cells cooking right now. That's it.
Going to stay in Reading?
Don't know. Love to travel. Can't do that right now. May move out of the great state of California at some point, but we love the people in Reading and love our friends and whatnot. So it's a mixed bag, but it's being considered.
You raised your kids through this here in town, right?
Correct, and they have actually all come back here. So I had a son that was in New Mexico for about 10 years, but he's back here in Reading, and the kids are all here.
That's good.
Yep.
What did you like better, the FBI or the bankruptcy trustee? Or is it a function of age?
Yeah, and that's a tough one. I don't, you know, there were 95% of both careers, I have to say, were incredibly positive, interesting experiences. I'm glad I'm not in the FBI now. I wouldn't have the job now. I'm glad I'm not a bankruptcy trustee now. I wouldn't have the job now. The bankruptcy job has also changed dramatically in the last couple of years, where You used to be able to use business judgment in many of the things and decisions that were made. Like everything, seemingly, both in law enforcement and in bankruptcy work, everybody's micromanaging everything to where you are just, you have no authority to make decisions on your own. Or if you do, you're second guessed by people that either haven't done the job or it's been so long ago that they did the job, they really don't know what they're talking about. So it's not as much fun.
What do you attribute that to?
I think power corrupts. I think that the farther you go up the food chain, if it's up the food chain, I'm not sure it is, but when you go up, that happens.
John, I really appreciate you being with me here this morning. I want to thank all of our listeners. Carl and Linda will be back tomorrow. Now take some time and do a random act of kindness. You will have a better day as a result.
And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.